You're listening to the Hockey Parent Podcast, episode number 4. Today I'm going to change the intro format by skipping the fanfare and paying my respects to an amazing father, friend, and coach, Omaha AAA Hockey Club assistant coach Shane Sanborn, who lost his life in a multi-vehicle accident December 10th, 2016. Shane and I were not only good friends, he was my stepson's father. This relationship was a little awkward for some people, but it worked for us. Shane and Tyler's mom, Amy, refused to allow selfishness to get the better of them and negatively affect Tyler. We tried extremely hard to set aside our differences for Tyler's benefit, and Tyler thrived because of it. Shane was very gracious, encouraging me to play the role of father figure to Tyler, a role I never took lightly. I was honored to be included in their relationship and humbled at his willingness to drop his guard. Shane was great at building bridges and growing his community. When I told Shane about my podcast idea, he not only encouraged me, he provided one of the first interviews. Today, you'll hear us discuss how he balanced being a parent and a coach. Before we get into the interview, I have to take a moment to thank our family and friends in the hockey community. We have received amazing support through hugs, letters, email messages, Facebook notifications, and financial donations. This goes way beyond the Omaha metro area, with many messages and donations coming from throughout the nation. Any notes of support sent through the Hockey Parent Podcast via Facebook, Twitter, or email will be passed directly to Tyler. If you're interested in making a donation, a trust for Tyler has been established. Learn how to make a direct donation by emailing neil@hockeyparentpodcast.com. If you would like to donate through Tyler's GoFundMe campaign, please ensure you search for the title Shane Sanborn's Sole Surviving Son to ensure the funds go where they're intended. Enjoy this interview with Omaha AAA Hockey Club assistant coach Shane Sanborn. We miss you, Shane. Shane, you're a parent and a coach.
Yes.
Two main topics that I wanted to get into. One is the relationship with your child, and then relationships that you have with other parents. Tyler's one of your players, and you have to worry about walking that line. Tell me about what it's like being a parent and being a coach.
You know, you'd think it would be a fine line most of the time, but I've pretty much said like this from the beginning with Tyler and I, since I've been his coach for several years, that he has to realize that when I'm on the ice and I'm coaching, I'm different from when I'm his dad. You know, being a father these days, you make sure that you protect your child and you're always taking care of them in certain circumstances. And I taught him early on that when I'm coaching, he doesn't get any preferential treatment. He has to play hard and do the right things at the right time.
Is there any push-pull with that where you got to worry about, I want to be a good dad, but I want to push my son in sports and I want to encourage him, but I don't want to be too hard on him?
Yeah.
How does that work out in your day-to-day life?
The intro to this is, I explained to Tyler early on that there's a difference between myself as a coach and then myself as a parent. You have to respect me as a coach, and then you have to respect me as a parent. And as a coach, he will get an earful a lot of the time, and it's different from when I'm just a typical dad giving him an earful of something. You know, I kind of learned the military way to break him down the right way and build him back up. So he's learned early on that when I'm speaking to him on the bench as a coach, it's different. I'm not his dad. It's almost like I'm just Coach Sanborn, and he's trying to teach me the right things to do when I'm on the ice. But yet, when I'm his dad, there are times that he does step out of line and still is treating me like a coach, and I have to remind him that I am your father, and things are a little bit different when we're off the ice.
So what about on the off-the-ice moments where you're at the house and you're trying to encourage him to take the time to do the extra work, or you see that maybe he's doing something wrong? And so how do you do that? How do you separate from being at the rink where it's easy? You're on the ice, I'm your coach. But then you go home and you want to work with him, maybe out in the garage or out in the driveway, and you still have that fine line, but now it's a little bit more gray because you're at the house.
It is gray, and it's hard to make that determination on where you want to be, either as a coach or a parent at that time. But I typically start out by saying, I'm trying to teach you to do the right thing let me stop you for a second, and I need to break down the mechanics of whatever you're doing, and I want to teach you the right way of doing it. And so I usually have like an intro to everything that I do with them. If I want to work with them, I'll give them that little intro of, hey, all I want to do is help you, and this is what I think you need to do to get better. And he usually understands. He picks it up pretty quick that I'm not trying to take over everything he's doing, because I do want him to have fun at home and do a few of his own things every once in a while just to have fun and be new. But if I do see something on a slap shot or a wrist shot or maybe even a toe drag, if I think he can do it better, I'll let him mess around a few times, and then I'll just say, hey, why don't you try this? And sometimes he likes it, sometimes he doesn't. And it's just one of those things. He needs to find the way that he likes to do it. I'm just going to give him every chance to make himself better.
So let's shift the conversation a little bit and go to that second subject that I brought up. How do you deal with the perceptions and the potential scrutiny that you might receive from the other parents? How do you balance that where you try to be approachable, but yet you're still a coach, and you have that stigma of you're his dad? You know, he works really hard, and a lot of credit to him for taking the time and becoming the player that he is, but there's still that perception, and you still have to work through, you know, maybe the sideways glances or maybe some people talking about you and a little bit of extra scrutiny that other people may not have.
Fortunately, I've made some pretty good friends with parents over the years. We've been with a few of these kids for going on 4 or 5 years now. I've known the parents. They're not new walking in the door today. I still try to keep my distance from when parents have get-togethers off the ice or at the hotel when they want to hang out. I try to minimize my time so I don't say the wrong thing or get caught up in the wrong conversation.
Do you ever catch yourself, either in practice or in a game, do you find yourself struggling every once in a while of, I think I'm being a little bit too easy on him, or I'm being a little bit too hard on him? Do you ever have that struggle?
I've always felt that I've been pretty hard on kids, and I feel like today kids just have it too easy. They think everything's just should be handed to them. And back when you and I were growing up, we did a lot of things for ourselves, and we took the difficult times with the good times, but we made the best of it. I didn't have all the opportunities like these kids do with camps. You know, I grew up playing hockey in a small town in New Hampshire. And the best coach that I had was in my junior varsity year, and he was from Sweden, and he taught me how to pass very well and move to open ice. And that was the first time I really started loving the game of hockey. I do have a tendency to be hard on kids, but I know that they can take it and that they're resilient, and I'm not demeaning in any way. I take the opportunity to raise my voice to get their attention. And when I have their attention, I explain to them what they did and what they can do to make it better next time.
So that's something that I meant to do when we first started talking. You mentioned being from New Hampshire. Give me a little bit of background. Your experience in hockey growing up, and then you left and went into the Air Force, mm-hmm. and continued to play. So tell me how you are bringing your involvement in hockey.
So growing up in New Hampshire, I pretty much had three sports that I enjoyed playing, and that was hockey, baseball, and the love for lacrosse. Fortunately, I got to play quite a bit of baseball when I was younger, but then started falling in love with hockey. I don't know what it was about being on a thin piece of metal with a bunch of pads on, being able to hit people, and trying to put that little rubber puck in the back of the net, but I just absolutely fell in love. At my grandparents' house, I had a pond that I skated on whenever I went over on the weekends. Neighbors made backyard rinks that we'd have hockey games on, and just had lots of fun. I moved schools when I was a freshman, so it was a little bit difficult for me trying to get back into the swing of things. But when I moved to Rochester, New Hampshire, is when I started in the JV hockey. And then from there, I played 3 years. I didn't play my senior year ended up going into the military. Kind of lost track of hockey for a while when I moved to Omaha. And I think about that time in either 93 or 94, someone decided to come up with this Metro Classic Hockey League thing. And I took a year, started playing hockey again, found the love of the sport. I moved to Germany for 6 years, and while I was in Germany, it just took off from there. I played in a German league, and I played for the USAFE, I guess USAFE Hockey League. I don't know what we'd call it, but it was for the base team.
For those of you people that are non-militaries, United States Air Force Europe is what he's referring to.
Yeah. So we played all over Europe. We played in Spangalem, Germany, Bitburg, Germany. We went into Brussels. We went down to Switzerland. We went into Italy and played all over and played against teams. It was a lot of fun.
I heard the Germans are pretty rough.
The Germans there were very rough. Yes.
I've heard some stories.
But they do like to drink their beer.
That makes up for it.
Yeah.
So at what age, you talked about hockey becoming your sport. Was there a point where you became a one sport athlete where you moved on from everything else, or did you continue to play the other sports?
Pretty much I became a one sport athlete when I was 14 years. That was my freshman year, and I decided hockey was what I wanted to do.
What do you see as the difference between what you experienced growing up on the East Coast and now what you're coaching and what your son plays as Midwest hockey?
That's hard. I mean, we're talking so many years in between from when I played to where he's at right now. I would definitely say where Tyler is right now as a player, he has by far surpassed anything that I could do when I was his age. He's had the work ethic. He's had everything thrown at him for USHL camps, summer camps, summer hockey, AAA hockey. I was limited to a little bit of travel and then right into junior varsity hockey.
So we are recording this at the hockey rink. There might be an occasional person walking by. We're over in the one of the coaches' areas. Hopefully not too many distractions, but if you hear somebody in the background, that's it. We're doing this at the rink. I thought that was appropriate, you know, being as how you're an on-ice coach. I'm an off-ice coach. I help out with the strength and conditioning program. I just thought it was appropriate recording this at the rink. So let's talk about managing expectations. So you want to instill a good drive towards winning. And winning is the ultimate goal of sports as a whole. On the flip side of that, people would say that the ultimate goal of sports is to build strong young men and women and to be resilient and to use sports to build them into something greater, to use the sports as a platform for that. So how do you try to merge those two and balance that, where you want them to go out and win because you want them to be encouraged and like the sport? At the same time, you want them to gain the experience, learn the skills, and learn the sportsmanship. How do you approach that?
I actually have to disagree just a little bit with that. I think right now at this age level and where we're at, I don't think it's about winning. I believe a lot of parents will believe it's about winning and how many games you can win. But for these kids that are 14, 15, 16 years of age, yes, you want to win, but it's about development. And it's about preparing yourself for the next year and what's upcoming. Their bodies are going through a lot of changes. 13, 14, 15 years of age, they're growing several inches, adding on a lot of weight, and their bodies are changing. So this is more about development to see who's ready for the game of hockey at a faster pace. Some kids are ready for it. Some kids are not. And it might take till they're 18 to figure out if they're ready for it or not. Yes, we like to win, and it's good for the kids to win, but it's also good for them to have those close, tight games and losses every once in a while to make sure that they go back to giving max effort And it's about effort and respect is how it comes down to. If everyone gives max effort on the ice, they're going to have a good outcome. When they don't give max effort, we can go back and point out those times on the ice where the effort wasn't given. And then that's probably the point in time where we've lost the game. And we can go back and realize that, hey, it takes a full three periods to win a game, not two and a half or not two. It takes all three. But those are the type of things that we want to instill in our children. You know, developmental wise, they have to prepare themselves for what's going to happen in the daily grind of work, that they need to respect everybody in their workplace. They need to respect each other on the ice, and they need to work as a team. And when they do that, they're going to have success.
So how do you balance that, or what do you say to the kids if you find yourself maybe running into a wall where you're having a few consecutive losses and you want to build them up and you want to encourage them? What kind of things do you focus on as a coach and as a parent, even, you know, when you leave the rink and now you're no longer a coach, you're the parent? How do you focus on that where you try to build them up despite the losses?
I guess I'd have to take a look at what type of loss it was. A lot of these kids have a tendency to look up teams that we're getting ready to play, and they'll see where they are in the national rankings and who they have that's on their team that's good and the top scoring leaders, and it's kind of a head game. I've seen coaches before, they take away cell phones, they limit parent time, especially at the 16 level, where they don't get a lot of that negative, almost like negative feedback from outsiders. So when you don't look at, when you look at another team as an equal, and that's what we tend to say a lot, that they're no better than we are. It just depends on the effort that we put in that day to win the game. And we've seen this time and time again. We've played some really good teams that we knew that were going to be good, and we've had close games. And it's shocked the boys at how close and how physical and how good and how fast-paced the game was. They had it in them the entire time. It was just finding it and putting it on the ice.
Let's talk a little bit more about expectation management. At this age, 14, 15, they're making big leaps, the growth and the weight and the cognitive ability to understand the game, and they're just leaps and bounds and they're growing so much. And it's really exciting because they're getting at that age where there's potential, there's camps, they start having conversations about prospects and what's the next level and how do you get to the next level. And you want to be realistic, because not everybody's going to play college, not everybody's going to play juniors, not everybody's going to play pros, but somebody's got to do it. So how do you balance that expectation management of, I want you to do as good as you can, and if you make it, that's great, but you still need to focus on education and, you know, that big conversation. You want to be supportive. You want to be realistic. How do you balance that at this age?
You never want to stop chasing your dreams. It is very tough being a AAA hockey player and putting up with the rigorous schedule of being gone a lot of Fridays, some Mondays, and your entire weekend is just gone to playing hockey games. The majority, actually every hockey game is played during the school year. So you're always missing school events. The big thing is to make sure that you are 100% in school when you can be in school and to have all your classes covered. I think we've done a good job with Tyler to make sure that when he has free time, that he has his grades, his schedule, everything's in check. Homework's taken care of. The tests are taken care of. If he can remake anything, he'll do it. And then it makes his schedule a lot easier. He's been doing this for a couple years now, and he's finally gotten used to it, where he knows in guided study, he takes care of any kind of homework that he has. If he's got extra stuff, takes care of it before we're on the ice. And I think if you get into that kind of mantra where you do it continuously over and over and over again, it's hard to stray away from that. I don't think anyone that will put themselves in that situation time and time again can all of a sudden just change and say, you know what, I'm not going to do my homework today, or I don't care about that test, or I'm not going to study for it. It becomes automatic. And that's a lot of things with hockey. Hockey is just a lot of automatic responses, whether you're moving your feet or you're getting into a position or you're taking a shot. It's the same thing over and over and over again that we practice. And that's what makes it so easy.
You've got a history in hockey. You played and you realized that your son was, you know, whether he liked it or not, he liked hockey as soon as he started playing it. And
actually he didn't.
Him. Oh, he didn't?
No, he didn't. We've got pictures of him when I played in Munich, Germany, at the Zugspitz in the Olympic Stadium. And he was just a little guy watching me play in the USAFE championships. And when I came here, I talked to Amy about it, and I thought to myself, well, I don't want to press him into anything. I'm not that parent. I don't want to do this. So I waited for him to become a certain age. I think he was like 5 or 6. And we found the IP program and decided to put him into it. And he absolutely hated it. The response that I got from him was, Dad, everyone's bigger and faster than I am. Well, yep, when they're 5 or 6 years older than you are, they are going to be bigger and they are going to be faster.
Did you have the crying where, Dad, I don't want to be out here, and then you forced him to kick him out and go back out on the ice?
I think it was one. He was out there for one session, and he came out and he goes, I don't want to do this again. And I just said, okay. And it blew up in my face. You know, I didn't want to push him into anything. At that time, I think he was still doing soccer and maybe even some t-ball and whatever else. And I think it actually took another maybe 6, maybe 9 months until we put him into a daycare at an inline skating place.
Tell me about your journey into coaching. So you've got the USA Hockey and the certifications and the levels. Mm-hmm. Explain a little bit about that.
Well, I decided to watch my son the first year that he wanted to play. And I watched, and a lot of people said, he's a talented kid. I don't know what it is about the sport, but I cannot sit down and watch hockey. I have to be standing up. So I talked to the head coach, and he said, suggestion for next year, that your son moves up a level. And it sounds like you know a little bit about hockey, so maybe you want to be a hockey coach. So I started looking into it. I became an assistant coach when Tyler's second year, he started playing. He actually moved up from Mites to Squirts, and he played his first year of travel hockey in Squirt A. And that's where I decided, well, I'll help coach, I'll open doors, and took my level one. And from there, it's just been great. I've had some great head coaches that I've just followed along, and I've watched what they've done, experience what they know and what they can do with the kids. And I just kind of take it all in. And each year I've gone through the levels. I've got my level 4. So now I'm done for a little while.
So how long does that take? So is it one level per year, or do you have to have them for an extended period of time with a certain amount of experience? How do they determine how you jump the levels?
1 through 3, you have to do back to back to back. And then you can actually be a level 3 for several years, reapply, be a level 3 for several more years. But then eventually you only have so many turns before you have to be a level 4. And once you're a level 4, you don't have to do it again.
Like the grandmaster of hockey coaches.
Kind of like the grandmaster, and until they came up with a level 5. And that's the grandmasters.
So let's take a step back. So you started talking about the different levels, Mites, Squirts. That was something that always confused me until Tyler started working through the levels. So talk to me about where they start off at, say, like an IP or a house league, and they start working their way up.
Yep. So an IP program is just to kind of find out where their abilities are. And pretty much what you want to be able to do is skate and stop. That's pretty much the gist of it. A lot of kids can skate and get going, but they can't stop, and you don't want anybody going into the boards head first. Right. So I remember when I first started with Tyler, and he was a mite, and he was right in there with all the other kids about speed, size, and ability.
And mite would be what age?
Mite, he was seven, okay. Eight.
And this is all kind of variable, of course. At that age, it's they can jump levels if they're good enough.
Right, and that's what we ended up doing, because the next year, Tyler was supposed to be a mite again, but he jumped up a level and went to squirts. They just allow a few more things. The kids are a little bit bigger, a little bit stronger. But he adapted well. He was the size of those older kids at the squirt level, and he was also at their ability, which was nice.
Got it. So you got IP. That's just a beginner.
Yeah.
And then you've got the mites, squirts.
So you typically do 2 years of each. So 2 years of mites, 2 years of squirts, 2 years of peewee, and then 2 years of bantam. And then you go into the midget level.
And bantam is your younger high school, like freshman. So that's not about right?
That would be the second year bantam.
Okay.
They would be typically their freshman in high school.
And then they get up into the high school level and you're talking midget.
Those are the midget levels when you're 15, 16, 17, and 18.
Okay. That's very helpful. As you've worked your way into becoming a coach, what have you noticed being out of the Omaha area? It's always been a little bit of a mystery to me. We play a lot out in Colorado, St. Louis, Minnesota, Chicago. What are those areas, how do they differ from Omaha? Is there a lot of difference? Do they have programs similar to ours? And then when you go up into like Wisconsin and Minnesota, you hear a lot about their programs and they just hang out in Minnesota and play high school hockey. Is that really how it is?
You know, Minnesota, Wisconsin, those kids just thrive early and they start early.
Is it an opportunity thing? Because it's just...
I think it's an opportunity thing. You know, I was actually talking to a guy that I just drove with from Minnesota last weekend, and we were looking at the size of the city, and we looked it up and it said 3.8 million. And then we looked at the size of Omaha, and they were at 900,000. And right there, you're looking at four times the amount of people. You could be looking at six to seven times the amount of kids. It's a lot more kids, and it's a lot more opportunity. They've got rinks all over the place. They've got rinks in high schools, attached to high schools. Whereas we have several throughout the metro, but sometimes there are a big distance between Omaha Papillion, Omaha Bellevue, Bennington, you know, and you have to bring in a certain number of kids to come here and play.
So you're looking at not only the amount of people, but also it's just the hockey community is bigger up there, and the opportunity to have ice is more readily available.
You know, you can pretty much say that almost every kid up there plays hockey in Minnesota. And I think it's safe to say that most kids play hockey and most kids will play baseball. And they are two sports until a certain age, unless they're a standout. Same thing in Colorado. They've got their hot spots all over the place. But once again, they've got rinks all over to handle those kids. Whereas we have a few rinks, but we just can't get the numbers at an early age to start.
Do you see the Midwest programs growing?
I believe it's growing. I've seen it in the past couple of years where it looked like our numbers were really low in the peewees and bantams. But now we've got full house league. We've got full travel league. All the teams are filled. Even in the bantam, we have an A, B, and a C team. Whereas in past years in the bantam, we could barely have an A team. And we've tried to have a double A team before, and we cannot compete in anywhere that we go. It seems like that we're starting to get the numbers up around here, where a lot more people are having fun with hockey. It seems like the attention of maybe collegiate teams and USHL teams in the area are helping to bring people to the area that want to play hockey and that are going to have fun here doing it.
Now, you see, I've seen a lot of the kids that have played with Tyler coming up through the different age groups. And when you start looking at the 16s and 18s, there's not a whole lot of local kids playing on those. Is it because there's opportunity in other areas, or is it because bringing in kids that are just better and they lose out on the opportunity to play?
You always want to have a good team. At that 16 and 18 age group, you're going to have kids that want to come to a high-quality AAA program. Dave Wilkie has put together a quality AAA program who's been to nationals and been deep into nationals several times, you know, second, third, fourth place, always high in the national rankings, top 10 in the past 4 or 5 years. And that's what kids are looking for. Who can get me attention? Who can get me a D1 scholarship? Who can coach me the right way? And Dave Wilkie finds those kids and he brings them in here to see if they fit into his program. We will see a very low percentage of kids from the Omaha area or the Midwest. I should say there has been kids from Iowa. There have been kids from Kansas City that have come through this program and have been successful, but it's a very low percentage.
Hockey is definitely not a cheap sport to play or to put your kids into. So let's talk about equipment. You definitely want to make sure that kids have the right equipment, and there's certain places where you don't want to cut corners. Talk to me about your theory on how you look for equipment for Tyler, and what advice can you give to people, and where can you cut costs, and where can you definitely not cut costs because you definitely need the quality for safety or performance?
Okay, so this was always a mystery to me for a while until I figured out how fast my son was going to grow. I didn't want to cut cost on certain things that were going to protect him, like a helmet. I didn't care about gloves. I didn't care about hockey sticks. Skates, he seemed to just cut through every 3 or 4 months, and we were always buying new skates. When he was younger, I always seemed to go middle of the road for his hockey equipment. I didn't skimp on a helmet. I've noticed when Tyler hit a certain age and he was growing constantly, he was on the ice 4 to 5 times a week and he started working out and then he was sweating a lot, that I couldn't go cheap anymore. He could go through a set of skates or a pair of skates that I bought for $300. He would have them destroyed within 3 months.
Nice.
So I have been able to go a little bit larger on shoulder pads, a little bit larger on elbow pads and breezers. I usually buy top of the line for those, but they have a tendency of lasting a few years. His breezers, his shoulder pads, elbow pads, they've all lasted a while. Skates are the ones that typically he'll blow through pretty quickly, and sticks also. It's kind of hard when you see a stick blow up on a power play or hard play, and there goes $300 down the drain.
And we were just talking about that the last weekend. He was taking a shot. Somebody stick checked him, and the thing just crumbled and
yeah, just blew up.
Looked over at Tyler's mom and said, "Yep, there's $250."
Yep. it's hard, but you know, I paid a decent amount for his last pair of skates, and they actually still look like they're brand new. So there really is, you know, when your kid kind of hits the top of his growth spurt and you don't think he's going to grow out of any skates anymore and he's practicing constantly, it really is worth getting pro-type equipment for them.
So primary, you would say helmet and skates. Everything else is negotiable.
Right.
Seems about right.
Yep.
Just feel. If your kid's growing quickly, you're going to have to figure out either you're going to be buying it over and over, or you got to try to buy bigger.
Correct. And even with hockey sticks, I told them, until you start playing at a high level hockey, I'm not going to buy you a $280 hockey stick.
Now, that's something that I see, and it makes me laugh. The kids are always trying to flex their sticks and talking about who got what stick, like you were thinking it was the hot car out for that year. What is the deal with kids and the sticks? Why are they so enamored with them?
Well, it's always about the newest and greatest thing. What the kids have no clue about is that it's most likely the same stick, just a different wrapping. That's all it is. They might have taken some weight off of it from somewhere else, and so it's a gram less than whatever. They've all got different flex points and kick points, so that's why they're always flexing their sticks to see where the flex point's at or the kick point. And that's something that I had to work on Tyler with last year. You know, him being a defenseman, he takes that big slap shot from the point. He doesn't need something that's going to flex all the way down by the blade. He needs a mid-kick stick. So when he drives through with his lower hand, the entire stick is going to take the force of that slap shot and propel that puck at, you know, 80, 90 miles an hour towards the net, and that's what he wants.
Is there anything that he's really finicky about when you guys are shopping for gear or talking about gear? Is there something that he really focuses on?
You know, he's almost like a girl. He likes to change things up all the time. And that's the one thing that I cannot understand. I hate it, and I don't understand it, that if you really like something and it works well, don't change it. But he's always wanting to change things.
Is it a style thing, or does he just see something new?
He just sees something new, and he just doesn't understand that it's hard to throw out $300 just to get something new just to try it. And I've always had a big discussion with that and have said, you know, if you like this certain stick and you like the certain curve, you should just buy three of them and be done for a couple years. But that new stick dad that's coming out, I really want that one.
It's right on the inside of the hockey magazine.
Yeah, but it's the newest and latest and greatest thing. But Tyler, it's the same stick that you have right now. It just has a different color to it.
So him playing defense, is there any unique gear, or is there any unique brands or style that you have to take into consideration for him being a defenseman versus one of his teammates at the forward position? I mean, you already talked about the stick. Is there anything else that's unique?
The one major thing that I bought him were skate defenders, skate guards. You know,
shot blockers. Got it.
He is that kid will jump in the way of a Mack truck if he thinks it's going to try to go in the back of the net. He is a puck blocking fool. And you know, you get those kids that'll take those slap shots going 89 miles an hour, and you take one off the front of your foot, it hurts. Ever since I bought him the shot blockers, not only does it protect his skates, but it keeps those pucks away from the from the front of your foot, your ankle, and let me knock on some wood here. He hasn't had any issues so far.
Nice. Good luck with that. When you think about the journey that you and Tyler have had together through this, what kind of highs and lows do you think of with you as a parent, with you as a coach, and watching him grow through? What are some of the good and bad things that you've experienced?
Definitely a good thing is how close we've become. That's the one thing about being able to do something that not only that you love, but that your son loves, is that all the time that you get to spend together while doing that. And when everything revolves around hockey, whether it's working out or doing schoolwork because you're getting ready to go to a hockey game or you have hockey that weekend, you know, I always take my time and spend as much of it as I can, whether helping out or just hanging out with him. A lot of our jokes stem around hockey. A lot of our conversations stem around hockey.
I don't think he does anything besides hockey.
I don't think he does either. He has hockey on the mind 24/7. We'll sit down and watch hockey games together. It's just, father-son thing to do, and he's completely fine with it. I would definitely say that's one of the best things that not only coaching him and being part of hockey, that it makes us so close. I would say the only bad thing about hockey is that how much of your time it takes. And it is a full-time job on top of a full-time job.
Has there ever been any conversations between the two of you as far as has he had any of those moments? And I realize that you're fully committed to supporting him, and he is absolutely committed to being in the sport, and he wants to play it. He loves to play, and he wants to do really well down the road. Has there ever been a moment of weakness where he said, you know, I'm not quite sure, or let's talk about this? Has there ever been any second guessing between either of you?
He's never had any that I can remember. I've given him opportunities to walk away and let him know that he could do anything else that he wanted to. If he didn't want to do the game anymore or the sport anymore, it was fine. And he always gravitates back to it. It's hard at this level when, first of all, you have a dad that tries to coach you, and then you have a coach with very high expectations to make sure that you're doing everything correctly. It's almost like a double whammy. I don't want him to feel like I'm right there just so I'm trying to watch just him, because I'm actually there. I'm committed to the team and not just my son. I like being on the bench for several reasons. One, so I can be out there with him. Two, because I cannot stand around and just watch hockey or sit around on a bench. I have to actually stand and be part of it. But I want to be part of it because I want to help everyone that's out there, all the kids. I want them to all learn how to be better players, better decision makers, respect the sport, and respect each other.
So I've got a couple more things and then we'll wrap up. Do you have any insight that you would like to give, survival tips or tricks for new parents or those that are they're making their way through it? Any little tips that you want to throw out there based on your experience?
I would say definitely embrace the sport at its fullest. This is one of the best sports out there. Yes, it's expensive and it is time consuming, but the love for it never goes away. And honestly, to look back at the number of kids that play this sport and who are good at it, it's not a very big number compared to basketball and baseball and, you know, all these other sports. There's a lot of talent and a lot of athleticism that's involved. So those beginning in this sport, you just can't get down. And it's one of those things that if you keep fighting, you'll get better. I've always heard from Jack Ortmeier that being on the ice is all the training that you need. And he's always said that to me. He's like, I've always given my sons, it's just as much ice time, and just let them just have that ice time and do what they need to do. And I fully believe in that. If that's what they want to do and they want to be on the ice, they can teach themselves. They can teach themselves how to have fun.
Right on. All right. So last question, your thoughts on traveling, SUV, truck, or minivan?
Definitely minivan. unless the SUV has a DVD player in it.
Because that's funny, because you're definitely a truck guy.
Yeah. I'm a big truck guy. I like to sit up high. But when you have several kids that sit behind you, and when they're younger, they're annoying. When they're bigger, they're 3 to 4 times as annoying. And they just the crap that they say and the things that they do, you just want them to be quiet and sit back there the entire time that you're driving. Definitely having a screen in your truck and to be able to play a DVD is a big difference maker.
And the space.
Yeah.
And the ride. So you're embracing the minivan.
Yep.
I love it. That's awesome.
Yep. I'll drive a minivan any day if it's got a screen in it.
That's awesome. All right. Well, that's all we've got today. Thanks a lot for coming on the show. I really appreciate it. It's been great.
Yep. Thanks for having me.